Hello.
All right, you sound
Hello.
good to me.
Hello.
Hello.
So nice to meet you.
Y'all want to start the show? Well, yeah. So I want to apologize for something that I said the way I said it in our last episode that, I listened to our edit and I okayed it, but really I probably should have gone back and taken it out. This is Ronit, by the way. I am apologizing today. I said there were two things that I hoped would become more common after this Me Too era had begun, which was that the second one was okay, and I still stand by it, which is that abusers don't feel as safe abusing in the climate that we are in now. But what I said incorrectly, unfortunately phrased, was that A, abused people wouldn't allow themselves to be abused as much. And that was horrible. What I don't mean that at all. It came out really badly. And I just want to call myself out on that, because what I wanted to say was more closely linked to the second piece of what I said, which is that I hope that people would understand that all bets are off when it comes to abuse, and that the whole climate would change in such a way that there wouldn't be as many opportunities for abusers to abuse, because everyone is less tolerant of that and there's more belief of victims. And I really feel badly for the way I said that, because I understand that it was wrong. And I understand that if you've been abused, it sounded as if I put the blame on you as a victim. And I don't mean that at all. And I am so sorry I said it the way I said it. The other thing I wanted to say was someone I saw this past weekend, this is on a lighter note, was retelling a story about a friend of theirs who was worrying about interviewing women for jobs and having private meetings with women. This is a man that has a friend who's concerned about this. He's a business owner and doesn't want to interview women because, oh my gosh, they might say something inflammatory and they might, you know, get them fired. And I got angry. I got rageful, because I don't get as angry as often as you, Katie. But, you know, I'm saying I got rageful, like, that's something. Because I was like, what are we talking about? I was like stumbling and stammering for an analogy, for a metaphor to underline how stupid I felt this comment was. It's like, what are you gonna, it's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
But what I really thought was, I was like, so you're telling me that this person doesn't want to be seen with women, interview women, hire women, or have to work with women because of God knows what they're going to say. That's like me, and part of me, I'm about to get blue, so cover your ears if you're little. That's like a woman saying to a man, you know what? I really probably shouldn't handle your man parts. I know that you want me to touch them because it feels good to you, but I'm worried that I might be too rough with them because sometimes I am. So actually, I'm not going to pay any attention to your testicles.
Totally. Or, honey, I can't give you a blowjob tonight because
that one time
I heard the Lorena Bobbitt story.
Yes. Thank
and
you.
I'm just afraid that I'm going to cut it off.
Okay, so let's
and like
use
there's
Katie's.
A, there's an easy solution to that, which is don't cut off the fucking penis and just like just treat it with respect.
Just learn,
just
listen,
lovingly caress,
yes,
respectfully with consent.
Yep,
the penis. Just because you heard a story one time about a person cutting off someone's penis doesn't mean it's like willy-nilly.
Oh, my gosh.
Willy-nilly, penises are going to be dropping.
That's right.
So like apples in October.
That's exactly right. You're listening to
Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I'm Katie.
I'm Ronit.
We are so excited today to have our first Skype guest of the second season of our show. You may know her from her appearance on MasterChef. You may also know her from her amazing food blog, Amanda's Plate. It's also a YouTube channel. Or you may know her from the program Dinner with Your Muslim Neighbor, which she co-founded. Her name is Amanda Saab, and we are so excited to have her with us today. Hi, Amanda.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I read this great article about you from the Washington Post that was sort of an introduction to your Dinner with a Muslim program that you co-founded, and I thought it was just amazing. And there's so much information about you. We can go to Amanda's Plate and read some of your blog posts, and I know you're on MasterChef too. But something that struck me about the article, which I wanted to ask you about, was that it said something about you thinking that a lot of people must not know any Muslims when you saw how much bigotry was out there soon after 9/11 and after that.
Yeah.
And you're interviewed in this article and you thought to yourself, have I played a part in that? Have I not reached out to people and given them an opportunity to meet me? And that's when you told your husband we should invite strangers over for dinner. And I thought it struck me in particular because I thought, how many people would actually wonder if they themselves had a part in a situation like that. You know, it's one thing to think, wow, people don't seem to know a lot of Muslims, or why is this bigotry rampant? But it's quite another thing, and pretty remarkable, to then ask yourself if you've played a role in that, and to then put it on yourself to try to remedy it.
Thank you. And I mean, just hearing you like say it like that, I'm like, oh yeah, that does sound pretty interesting. But I think a lot of us do take action and put onus on ourselves. Like, you know, when we hear about climate change and we then get rid of like one-time used water bottles and start, you know, we all try to do our part in some ways. And just thinking about like my own neighbors feeling like they don't know a Muslim or that they've never met a Muslim, I'm like, well, do I ever like have a meaningful conversation? Do I get to know people? Am I, you know, available? Do people feel like they can approach me in that way and ask questions if they have them?
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of felt natural and what I should do.
So Amanda, let's go back for just a second. Can you give us like the elevator pitch for dinner with your Muslim neighbor, which is such a freaking awesome idea?
Thank you. So dinner with your Muslim neighbor is a way for communities to get together with their Muslim neighbors to ask questions and get to know what life is like for American Muslims in a safe and drug-free environment. At least that's the hope in creating the dinners in homes where it's more personable and people can really get comfortable and hopefully just maintain that level of respect and dignity and kindness.
So, okay, follow-up question.
Yes.
Who is doing the cooking at the dinner with your Muslim neighbor?
I usually do dinner and he does cleanup, which is great, cause especially after like a large dinner party, like there's a lot of cleanup. So.
Totally, because then you get to do the fun part of building the meal and then you can be like, oh, I'm going to go upstairs and take a bath.
Exactly.
while you deal with this. So have you had the experience yet of like sitting down with strangers at your table and saying like, hey, let's get to know each other over this delicious food that I've cooked?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really great for me because I have access to so many people on social media and because I'm available and share my recipes and that sort of thing, that people feel comfortable responding and like they want to come over. And then I just kind of do a little screening of their social media profile and make sure like they're all good and everything seems legit. And then I give them my address and they're invited over for dinner and we've never met before. We do, you know, have like six other people that I've probably met before. So it's not like all complete strangers, but there is a good mix there.
I know that you started this in Seattle, and then when you moved back to be with family and start your family to Michigan, you have continued it there. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So we kind of do it where we are, and we've even done one in Ohio and one in Colorado.
So does your family and your friends, does anyone else extend this type of dinner to people, or what do they think about you doing this?
They think it's great, and sometimes my family will join us. My mom's joined us. My sister's joined us before. I've had friends join us, so they like to take part. And I feel like we're in a really unique area here in the Metro Detroit community where, like, I feel like people are more connected here.
Yeah.
So people, I think, are more likely to know their Muslim neighbors.
I love to be with my friends, but I don't like to host people. So I feel like it's really amazing that you're doing it. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of mental and kind of emotional energy to put yourself out like that.
Okay. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I don't think everyone can be like a host and do it regularly. It is a lot of work. And we've been on hold for a few months just since starting like the bakery and everything, but we definitely plan to continue once that's kind of off the ground and out of startup mode.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So is that with your family or your friends, or are you doing it solo?
It's me. I mean, my family, my friends help me, but it's my dream. So I've always like wanted a place where I can create food and share with people and also incorporate a way to give back. So for every purchase, we give back to food banks in the area. So
that's amazing.
And it's like so fun. I realize what I love most is just connecting with people.
You know, one of the things that I really, really wanted to talk about was the use of the word neighbor, because it really feels like such a generous word and like such a warm word. It's a word I use a lot with my kids when we're talking about people that we don't necessarily know, but like literally anyone that we run into on a given day, I might describe as our neighbor, because it really feels like the way to say, like, listen, we're all connected here. We all have to rely on each other to get through this life and this world together. So, like, let's just treat everyone like they're our neighbors and as if we're all in one big community and, like, take care of each other a little bit. And I think to kind of, like, shift a little bit, what you're talking about is so, so important. I mean, it's always important to connect with your community and to, like, help in a way that feels safe, help people kind of grow their empathy towards you, because you are a Muslim woman who wears a hijab. And so I imagine that there have been times, you know, in the U.S. where you have had the experience of people prejudging you. I mean, I don't have to imagine, right?
Yes.
That's like the biggest understatement I may have ever said on the podcast.
No, but yeah, it's true.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people right now are really confronting, you know, a lot of previous traumas, previous times that they've felt unsafe. And I would love to just kind of talk about how, like, coming together, particularly around food, can be such a healing force and, like, a community force at times where, like, people feel scared.
Yeah. So something that really stayed with me, and just like one of the core Islamic teachings, is to be kind to your neighbors. And like the Prophet Muhammad said that your neighbors are like over a mile in each direction. So if we even just like imagine that and just think of our community and our neighborhood and our neighbors and treat all of those people with respect and then continue to expand beyond that, like everyone, kind of like what you tell your kiddos, like everyone's our neighbor. And then just using food, it's like the universal connector to all people, because we can all agree when something is really good. I mean, sometimes it's subjective, but like we can pretty much all agree. Like,
and I also think you can agree on the generosity. Again, I keep using that word, of the person who prepared it for you and is taking pleasure in your pleasure.
100%.
So we were really excited to talk to you because of the work you're doing. And also we thought about how hijabs, and who do we know who we can talk to about their experience wearing one in this climate in our country, when there are unfortunately so many narrow-minded seeming people coming up for air and trying to take up a lot of space. And so I'm curious how it feels to wear one in our current climate, maybe versus a couple of years ago, although it's my understanding that you began wearing it in your childhood a little bit later. Is that right?
So I was 16 and I was in high school, and that's when I decided I want to be a practicing Muslim and I want to take it to the next level and kind of affirm my faith by starting to wear hijab and just saying to myself first when I get up in the morning that God comes first and this is my priority in life. And, you know, that was post September 11th, and there was a time where I was verbally assaulted on the road, just called all sorts of names and told to get out of this country, despite me being born in this country.
Wow.
Just completely taken aback. And it's happened several times, unfortunately, in my adult life. And, you know, there are times where I'm like, okay, I need to be like extra cautious going into this area. I know it's not like as diverse and maybe they haven't seen as many Muslims. So I try to use precaution, especially now, like if it's just me and Hannah, just like to be super aware of our surroundings, making sure like someone knows where we are. Just because you do hear so many horrific stories just like happening. I mean, there was like a woman in San Diego who was like walking with her kid across the street and got like punched in the face. Which is crazy.
That must be so scary to hear about that.
It is, because, you know, I see myself in the way that person dresses as well, just like all-American woman wearing hijab.
Right.
And, I mean, it's so close to home.
When I was Absolutely. Thinking about this, I was thinking about, like, I wonder if your relationship with it had changed over your life. Because I remember, as with a lot of these kinds of, like, milestones of adulthood or womanhood, like getting your period for the first time, it was something that like I looked forward to. But then once mm-hmm. the reality of it set in, I was like, this is terrible. I hate this. And I cannot wait for this to be over. And I was just wondering if you ever had a moment like that where you were excited to have this like milestone reached in terms of your like adulthood and your relationship with your faith. But then if there was ever a time that you were like, oh, I got to put the thing on again, you know?
Yeah, I'm fortunate in that I've never like wavered in my decision to wear hijab, never feeling like, oh, I have to put it on, but feeling like, oh, I have to deal with people who have issues with me putting it on.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you could let us and our listeners know the background behind hijab?
Yeah, so hijab translates to Arabic as covering. So it means more than just covering your hair and your head. It's dressing modestly. It's really a code of behavior and the way you conduct yourself. And there's actually in the Quran, the male hijab is mentioned before the female hijab. And the male hijab is to lower their gaze and not to gawk at women and to treat them with respect. And we wear it, you know, for modesty, but also so that people can recognize us as Muslims. So whether you're in Detroit, Michigan, or you're in Xi'an, China, where I was and was recognized as a Muslim, and my Chinese wasn't very good, and their Arabic wasn't very good, or their English wasn't very good, and we were still able to recognize, hey, we're Muslims, and we can connect and say assalamu alaikum.
I'm looking through. We had got some amazing questions from listeners. We put out a call if anybody had ever had a question about wearing hijab and were like afraid to ask because, you know, hopefully everyone listening to this knows you don't just like walk up to a person on the street and be like, so tell me about your hijab. You know, like that's kind of lame. But we're so, so thankful for you being here to answer these questions. I want to kind of like throw a couple of them at you. Kind of some of the like smaller, more logistical ones.
Yeah.
One listener asked, do you put your makeup on before or after you put on your scarf?
So I put it on before, definitely. So like my morning routine, kind of wake up, wash my face, brush my teeth, put my makeup on, and then get dressed. I have had times where I had to like do makeup like later after I've already left the house and my hijab was on, and that's just a mess.
That's a tough one. Okay. Here's a good one. Is there a difference between the hijab styles of younger generations and older generations? This listener said, I don't wear the same clothes as my mom or grandma or my 15-year-old niece. Are there trends or is it basically the same across generations?
There's definitely different styles and kind of personal trait. I would even say it's like always generational. I think sometimes there are like other millennial Muslims who wear their hijab in different styles than me. And I think people wear things that suits their face shape. There's like lots of tutorials on like hijab styles for like round face shapes. And that's kind of what I go for. But I think definitely I don't wear my hijab the same way my grandma does.
Interesting, because that's not something that I feel like I would necessarily pick out if I saw like three women of different generations standing next to each other. This one's interesting. The listener said, this might be a weird question, but okay, here I go. If a person who's assigned male at birth comes out as a trans woman, if she were a Muslim, would it be okay for her to wear a hijab?
I mean, absolutely. If, you know, someone's identifying as female and they're practicing Islam and want to wear hijab, then absolutely. I mean, yeah, I don't see awesome. Why that would be a problem.
Okay, cool. What do you think about those? I don't know if you've ever heard about these. There are these kind of progressive statements of support or like activist moments where non-Muslim women wear a hijab for a day to express like solidarity with their Muslim neighbors.
Yeah, I think it's really awesome that people are willing to go outside of their comfort zones and kind of walk a day in the life of being a Muslim woman in 2018. I think it's really cool. I mean, I know there's been a lot of differing opinions on it, but I think it's cool. I mean, it's always nice when we can take a step outside of our comfort zone and then actually do something instead of just like posting a status.
Yeah, somewhere. Like you welcome people into your home and like feed them. And we should be able to like meet you halfway on that. Another great one. When do you wear a hijab and when do you take it off? Do you wear it at night while you sleep with your pajamas or to get a massage? When you wake up in the morning, is it the first thing you put on or do you go make breakfast in your bathrobe first and then put it on when you're getting ready to go out?
Yeah, so it's definitely not the first thing I do in the morning. I don't put it on until I'm ready to leave the house. I don't wear it when I sleep. I don't think anyone wears it when they sleep. When I wear a massage, no. I don't wear my hijab when I get a massage. And like when I come home from work, it's like I take it off.
Is it more for the outside world or is it more for an internal sense of, you know, closeness with your religion?
Well, it's both. So, you know, it's multifaceted. It's more than one reason, but it's definitely, okay, I'm going out to the world. I'm getting ready. This is how people will identify me as Muslim. It's also spiritual in that, you know, hey, I have this. I'm covering. I'm being modest for God. But, I mean, if I'm having people over, then I'm wearing my hijab.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I hope it's okay to ask you all these questions.
Of course. Of course.
Great.
Do you ever, and I'm struck by this as we're asking these questions, are you ever like amused by people's fixation on this one garment?
Yes.
Right?
All the time. I'm like, for me at least, it's just a part of who I am and part of like how I get ready for the day. So it's so interesting, especially when you hear people that, you know, want to say like, oh, we got to liberate Muslim women. And it's not to say that there aren't people who are forced to wear hijab, because there are, and we can't deny the reality. But I think a good majority of those who are living in the United States, at least, have definitely made a choice or had some choice in how they choose to dress.
I was just thinking, as we were asking all of these questions, I was like, what if Ronit and I were invited onto like a man podcast to talk about like women's underwear shopping or something? Like, how do you get fitted for a bra? And what do you do if your straps are too long? Do you just tighten them up? And it's like, yeah, you just tighten them. Like, it's just, it's a thing that I wear because it's part of my day. But, you know, like, are there ever any questions that you wish people would ask about just kind of your experience instead of fixating on this one element of your identity, or, you know, the identity that is like your, what's the word I'm looking for? Your appearance.
Well, I think part of hijab too is being willing and able to answer questions about Islam, because you're saying like, I'm Muslim and you can see that, and everywhere I go, you can see that. And I don't feel like it's kind of like an obligation, but I mean, there is some duty. I don't know if that's like coming off the same way, but like there should be some comfort in being able to answer the questions. But sometimes I get a kick out of like, do you sleep with it? And not to make that question asker feel silly about it, but I mean, I don't shower with it. Like, come on.
Okay. Hard right into Gordon Ramsay. This game. I have always had a huge crush on Gordon Ramsay. Like, I find him extremely relatable. I think he and I might be soulmates in a lot of ways. And I am just curious because you are the first person that I've ever spoken with who has actually interacted with him face to face. Does he wear any kind of cologne?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Katie's going to ask you, this is Romeo. Katie's going to say, what does he smell like?
What does he smell like? Does he smell like, I imagine he either smells like cooking garlic, like garlic in a pan of butter, or like a really fancy cologne.
So I definitely didn't smell cologne. And then like all the smells of the kitchen too, like all of our interactions were in a kitchen. So if there was like a cologne he was wearing, it was definitely like washed out by everything else in the kitchen that was cooking.
Totally.
But he's just like so tall. I'm like 5 foot. So he was like literally a giant standing in front of me.
Oh my gosh, that must have been scary.
Yeah, it was.
I'm so thankful for you being generous with my...
I have a question. Amanda, is there anything we haven't asked you that you would like to answer at all?
Well, I think it's like really awesome that you guys like are highlighting, you know, me and sharing my story. And I think it's really great. And I know there are so many like other women who are doing amazing things too. So I guess I just want to give them a shout out as well.
Oh my gosh.
It's true.
Like that's, and I feel like that is really like how we're all kind of getting through this right now, this crappy couple of weeks. I'm calling it the fortnight from hell now. Do you have like a favorite comfort food that you turn to at times of stress or something that you just want to snuggle up with after a hard day?
Yeah. So, and it's something I tend to be making like more frequently now that I like realize that I am stressed. It must be like all the bakery stuff. But I love making pasta, which is like just like a Middle Eastern meatball, and hummus and baba ganoush and tabbouleh, just like as a like platter, but I mean, not so fancy every night, but that's my comfort and just like warm pita.
That sounds amazing. We might have to go to our favorite Lebanese place tonight and get some warm pita.
You totally should. It's my favorite. Delicious.
All right, Amanda, it has been our pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for answering our questions, answering our listeners' questions. We would absolutely love to send people to your blog, which is Amanda's Plate. She also has a YouTube channel. Do you want to promote your YouTube channel?
Yeah, it's Amanda's Plate as well on YouTube. And if you're in Michigan, you should come to my bakery, Butter Bear Shop. I'd love to share some delicious treats with you. Just stop by and say hello.
And it's like a win-win-win-win. Like it's a win times 10 because you get to meet Amanda. She gets to feed you amazing food that you then get to eat. And her shop is also supporting the local food bank. Amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
Give us your social media.
Yeah, at Amanda's Plate and at Butter Bear Shop and also at Muslim Neighbor.
We'll put all of that on our Facebook page. We'll put all of that on our Twitter also. We are so, so excited to know you now. And we're really looking forward to seeing what kick-ass awesome things you do.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you so much for having me on.
That was really fun, and she seems really nice.
I need some tabbouleh.
I want to meet Amanda. I feel like
I want to meet Amanda.
I really feel like Michigan is in my future. Our future. Let's go together.
Field trip.
What if, like, next week you're like, wait, isn't Renee supposed to record with us this week? And I'm like, sorry, guys, I'm in Detroit.
At the bakery.
At the bakery with Amanda.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I really want to thank Amanda for being incredibly gracious and generous with all of our questions.
Yeah.
And of course, you can join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at Mouthy Podcast. We will be tweeting and Instagramming and Facebooking some excerpts from this show. So hopefully you can.
And Katie will still try to unpack what Gordon Ramsay smells like.
What does he smell like?
It's so funny. I knew you were going to ask that.
And
I was going to ask her, what does he smell like?
Garlic and sage.
Yeah.
Garlic and sage.
That's what I imagine. Leathery woods.
Yeah. Maybe an omelet. With goat cheese.
Cut.